Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of Smallville, the Young Superman series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB / the CW. And this week, I'm joined by my friend Nancy Petru. What's up, Nancy?
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me. What's up? Me. It's early in the morning.
That's right. You see, we usually record these podcasts. This is a rare daytime recording, at least for me. Nancy is a fellow podcaster. Now, do you record most of your podcasts at night or in the morning, Nancy?
It's usually in the early afternoon on Thursdays. Okay. We try to get them all finished, the recording for the week. So it's usually 4 to 5 hours of recording.
So what's the name of your podcast, by the way?
Oh, it's...
Let's go ahead and plug you right off the top.
Well,
right off
sure.
The top.
Why not? Well, it'll probably only be interesting to many of your listeners who are writers. I co-host the Author Strong podcast with my friend Matt. Giving writers the tools they need to succeed. It's our tagline.
Well, there you go. I like it. Yeah, we usually record late at night for various reasons. So it's nice to have a full day here. Got a full day ahead of us. It's early in the morning. It's gonna be it's gonna be a productive day. So
yes.
So thanks for joining us, Nancy. So Nancy was on her last episode was Craving with Amy Adams. And this week we have Crush with Adam Brody. So you got some Hollywood stars. In your small episodes.
I was really excited to watch this episode.
Yeah, I remember.
It's always fun to do these. Like, Craving, I was really surprised how much I enjoyed it for its, like, goofiness and some other, you know. Because I haven't watched Smallville. Not really.
What?
So. Blasphemy.
Yes, but Nancy and I are old friends, and she's a fellow podcaster, so she's more than qualified to talk about the series on the show here. Now, not everybody needs to be an Uber fan. In fact, I enjoy the different points of view. You know, especially from you, Nancy, who has little to no exposure. I mean, you have a general idea of what this show is. You don't know episode titles. You don't know the ins and outs of the show. And I find that a nice, refreshing perspective on something like this because you get so inside fandom here. It's hard to, like, step out and get a different point of view. So that's what I like about one of the many reasons I like talking to you about things on the podcast here, Nancy. So thanks for coming back.
Aw, well, thanks for having me. You're too kind.
So we are going to start off here with some iTunes reviews. We have some more iTunes reviews. So by the way, folks, if you're out there listening, which obviously you are if you're hearing my voice right now, please go to iTunes. We're always holding on to Smallville, as you know, since you're listening to the show. I need to work on my iTunes reviews plugs, clearly. But the point is... If you like the show and you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave us a review on iTunes. And we've gotten several in recent weeks. So we're going to go ahead and just read through them here. If that's cool with you, Nancy. You got nothing better to do, right?
That's absolutely cool with me. Let's hear about it.
So we have one from Leave Our Friend Chris. Listen, guys. Fuchs. How would you say that, Nancy? Fuchs?
I think it can be both.
Okay, so Chris Fuchs, thank you so much. I don't want to risk, messing up our explicit rating. So, thank you so much, Chris. You know, and let us know. You're very active on our social media. Please let me know how to pronounce your name, and I will say it with pride next time it's appropriate on the podcast. So, iTunes review from Chris, and he says, "Keep up the great work. Love the podcast." Brings me right back to eagerly looking forward to the next episode of Smallville every week, but now it's your podcast. Any fan of Superman will love this. Highly recommended. 5 stars. Well, thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate that.
Aw, that's so nice.
Yeah, and Chris is usually like one of the first, like there's always a handful of people when you first post something that like a post or something like that, and he's always one of those people, so thanks so much, Chris. Keep it up, man. And our next review comes from Your Money Taker, and... titled Great Concept, Even Better Show. So are you talking about the podcast or Smallville? We'll see. he says, he or she says, love the show, love Smallville. So I guess you're talking about both. Thank you. Started a topic on IMDb to try help raise awareness for you guys. Hope it helps. Well, thanks so much, Your Money Taker. I appreciate that. Have you ever posted on IMDb message boards, Nancy?
Oh, no, never. I'm such a lurker.
Yeah, exactly, right? So the next review comes from Bird Lucinda. And, you know, this looks familiar. I think, you know, forgive me if you are someone else that has either emailed or commented on Facebook or Twitter. If you are, I guess let me know through Facebook or Twitter. But Bird Lucinda had this to say. This podcast will be the stuff of legend. Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you so much. That's referencing a famous Lex Luthor quote at the end of a season one episode.
Oh, I didn't thank you for explaining that for me.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So here's what they had to say. It's looking back and reliving a time that we were all growing up with Clark Kent. I loved Smallville and still do. To this day, it's my favorite show. The episodes, most of them, hold up after multiple rewatches, and these podcasts review those, make you feel like you're watching the show. Details are brought to light, plot lines good and bad are discussed, Superman and the comics are discussed, new facts and interesting Easter eggs that were planted in the episode are revealed. It is clear that podcast creator Zach and whatever guest have a love for Smallville that never went away, as the title, Always Hold On to Smallville, implies. There's a fun and genuine nostalgia to each episode. Great listen. Well, thank you so much, Bird Lucinda. Kind words, yes. And, you know, I always hold on to Smallville myself, so that's what I'm trying to get everyone else to do as well. And then finally, we just had this this review just came in at the time of this recording. This just came in yesterday. So fresh off the presses, hot off the presses. Comes from Reformed Baptist. And the you know, the title here, it says, Greatest Podcast Ever, ... And then it continues, and I can't see the rest of the word based off how I'm looking at it on my iTunes app and on my iPhone. Very professional setup I have here. So I'm just going to assume you call this the greatest podcast ever, so I'm going to keep reading. Hey, guys. No matter if you love Smallville or not, this is a great podcast, and I guarantee you will enjoy the episode reviews and banter from the guys. At least one girl once. That's you.
Hey!
Hey, shout out.
Okay.
Shout out.
That's awesome.
The only moment of hesitation is hearing them say they found something positive to talk about from the Batman vs. Superman movie, which was, critically speaking, a steaming pile of kryptonite meteorites. Thanks, Zach, Z-A-C-K, or Zach, Z-A-C-H, you found a subscriber for life. Well, thanks, the Reformed Baptist. I'm not the biggest Batman v. Superman fan. We went into depth twice now about the movie, the original theatrical cut back in March, and then our previous episode here on Always Sold on the Smallville was our panel discussion on the Ultimate Edition. So for more of my thoughts on that, go to that podcast. And yes, I spelled my name Z-A-C-H, which is the correct spelling of Zach, as opposed to Z-A-C-K like Zack Snyder, or Z-A-C like Zac Efron, or, you know, I've seen Z-A-K-K, which is also an interesting spelling. There's many spellings. Nancy, what do you think is the correct spelling of Zach? You're an English person. If you were to create a fictional character named Zach, how would you spell their name?
Well, I mean, Zach is short usually for Zachary, which is mm-hmm. Z-A-C-H. So,
although you'd be surprised, I've seen it Z-A-C-K, like A-R-Y. I've seen E-R-Y and Zachary. There's so many variations of Zachary. So.
Well, I mean, you know, now there are. But I think traditionally it was the Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y.
Yes, from the Greek, Zacchaeus, or Zachariah.
Like, really? Really?
My name is biblical. I will have you know.
Touche. I think mine's Hebrew.
Can Nancy be spelled with an I at the end of it?
Okay, so yes, but I have never met that person.
Okay, all right. Well,
but for some reason, the barista always... There's one barista at one coffee place that always spells my name that way. And I want to ask her, like, do you know another Nancy was just spelled with an I?
Is the I a heart-shaped I, like on the coffee cup?
No, I'm sad that it isn't. Well, now I'm disappointed. I'm missing out.
Yeah, see, I don't have a name like that. Nobody can put a dot on my I or cross a T or anything like that. So you know.
Oh, so, you're missing out.
I know, right? So much lost love over the years. Now, we did have some emails.
Okay.
I do want to read just a portion of some of these emails because they're quite long. Now, you know, and this is why I think perhaps Bird Lucinda is Robin Sodmont, because Robin has sent us some emails.
Okay.
And her email has bird in it, so I'm thinking that might be the connection. If not, I apologize for confligulating. I don't know if that's the right word, but these two you two people. So she basically says, and I'll read the very beginning and then I'll just summarize, because she wrote quite an essay here twice. Anyway, hey, and that's great. I love reading them myself. We just don't have time to read them word for word on the air all the time, Robin. So but thank you so much for writing. And she says, hello there, Zach. I just wanted to say how much I enjoy the podcast and hope you do follow through with it till the end. I'm very interested to hear the thoughts on a lot of later episodes as well. I'm a bit of a nerd who loves Smallville. It was a major part of my life, so I loved the podcast. So, you know, she also went on to give me a tally of how many saves each character had been saved for the first five seasons. So, you
ooh,
know,
interesting.
I will put a pin in this, and then when we get to the end of season five, I will come back to this email. I know that's going to be I know that feels like forever away, but
no, I'm kind of interested to know, actually.
Well, do you want to know right now? I could tell you now. We can take a look into the future, into the year 2000. In the year 2000. Come on, Conan O'Brien, anybody out there? You know what I'm talking about. I missed that.
Yes.
So let's take a look into the future, Andy.
Yeah, tell me. I want to know.
Let's see. She said that, okay, so let me pick up the email here. I remember that once I went through and took account of how many times each character was saved by Clark. Lana, of course, was the winner. I guess I only went up to season 5 when I did this, and though some of the counts seem low-looking, now, I was going to say they're pretty accurate. Of course, things would get a little tricky when he would save the whole school from the villain of the week, or the second meteor shower, or the whole world metropolis from Lex Zod. See, was spoiler alert, right?
Oh, no.
But I did my best those years ago. I actually had a tally of the person for each of the five seasons I did this for, but I just totaled them here to spare you. So total saves for Lana in five seasons is 30. Okay. Total saves for Martha in five seasons is 16. Total saves for Jonathan in five seasons is 15. Total saves for Chloe in five seasons is 20. Total saves for Lex in five seasons is 20. And then we get into characters who didn't quite have all the five seasons, but they were still there in the first five seasons.
Yeah.
Total saves for Whitney would be 4. Total saves for Pete would be 12. Total saves for Lois, yeah, because she shows up, 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
And the total saves for Jason, and I don't even going to go into who he is. Don't worry about him. But he's basically the older brother on Supernatural, okay?
Like, oh, it's
Jensen
gotcha.
Ackles. He was in Smallville for a season. Jason was saved 4 times. So there you have it. So she signs off with, so there you have it. Thanks for reading this long email. Carry on with the podcast now that at least this dedicated fan is enjoying it. I will always hold on to Smallville. Take care, Robin. Well, thanks so much, Robin, and thanks for that tally board. And then Robin sent me another email after that with a picture of her Superman collection. She has a corner of her room, and I will post this on social media just so everybody can see it. So thanks so much, Robin, for sharing that. It's a pretty cool little Superman memorabilia corner. She's got Superman painted on a wall, some Superman symbols, some action figures, some artwork, stuff like that. And yes,
awesome.
Robin, so I, and just so you know, everybody who sends me an email, I totally read it all, but just so you guys know, like, there's just not enough time in the day to read them all word for word on the podcast. And Robin, I encourage you to keep sending me emails. I just won't be able to read them all in their completion online, but I will be sharing your picture of your Superman corner on social media. So, and hopefully that's not a problem. If it is, just let me know.
Awesome. I bet not. That's,
I know,
awesome.
Right? and then finally, our friend Corey Moore, who emails me every week. Appreciate it, Corey. Yeah, our last Smallville episode discussion was over Drone, so he had this to say: "Hola," which is Spanish for hello. "As always, your conversation was highly entertaining. I'm always pleased to see when you release a new episode. I checked my records, and I gave Drone a B-, but after listening to your review, I'm starting to think my grade was too high. The Freak of the Week was below average, and the Godfather movie stuff was a bit much. My favorite scene is when Chloe was praising Clark for how he handled defeat. Chloe / Allison Mack is great, and she turns out to be one of my favorites in the series. What a wonderful actress she is. Have a great week, Corey." Well, Corey, thanks for that email, and I think that's a perfect transition into this week's episode, Crush, which is a Chloe episode.
Yes, I'm excited.
Of the two episodes of Smallville you've seen for the purposes of this podcast, Nancy, do you like Chloe? You like Chloe's character?
Yeah, I like Chloe's character. She's that, like, typical, like, spunky, full of moxie, curious, kind of advocating for herself, but they still put her in, like, crappy damseling roles, but we'll get to that later.
We will get to that later.
I do like her, though. I like what they're going for with her. I like that she fills that niche, and she doesn't, you know, she gives Clark a hard time about Lana, which I appreciate because I despise that relationship right now.
Well, good. We'll get into it here. Absolutely, we will. Because this episode in particular has some interesting points to talk about as far as that goes.
Indeed.
I will say Chloe is the proto Lois Lane. And, you know, she's filling that Lois Lane void in the Superman story. Because, look, we have Clark Kent Superman. We have Lex Luthor. But we need a Lois Lane type. And, you know, for the purposes of the first three seasons of Smallville, and in fact, the first seven seasons of Smallville, even when, you know, the real Lois Lane shows up on the show, Chloe continues to fill that role. And I have my thoughts about that, where what they could have done with those characters in relation to each other moving on. But I don't want to anger a huge majority of our fan base and listenership just yet, because we're still early in the podcast. I'll save that for later. So
that's a good idea.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and jump into it. Crush.
Didn't expect to see you here. I thought you'd be helping Chloe proof the latest edition.
She had enough help.
Are you two still fighting?
You said we were fighting.
Kind of caught it yesterday at the career fair. What's going on with you two?
Chloe likes me.
So how do you feel about her?
Like maybe we could be more than friends? When I saw her with Justin today, I got kind of...
jealous?
It's like you find out this secret and it colors everything. Just can't believe I never saw it before.
Sometimes the right person can be right in front of your eyes and you never even know it.
How's Whitney? I hear his dad's feeling better.
He's great.
Everything okay?
Never better. Good luck. I hope things work out with Chloe.
Me too.
Crush is the 19th episode of Smallville's first season. It aired on May 7th, 2002. It was written by Philip Levins, Alfred Gow, and Miles Miller, and directed by James Marshall. So Crush opens up, and we get a zoom in to the Metropolis Children's Hospital. So, and I thought to myself, you know, this isn't really, I mean, it doesn't strike you as a hospital visit, because one of the categories on my Smallville tally board is hospital visits, but I cannot ignore a big sign that says Children's Hospital, so we're going to count this as a hospital visit, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
on the tally board. And we zoom in through the window. It's kind of a cool opening shot. And we see Adam Brody is our guest star. And he's playing a character named Justin Gaines, and he's clearly an artist of some kind, struggling to draw something on a canvas. Now, what do you best know Adam Brody from, Nancy?
I'm trying to remember. I'm one of those people that's really good with recognizing faces, but not putting like faces and names with other things that they've done.
He's probably best known for playing Seth Cohen on the OC. Did you ever watch the OC?
Oh, nope. But I did hear a lot about it. Is the OC the show that Lance likes?
Yes, exactly. Because Lance is from California, grew up there.
I have to say, I know that I heard a lot. Like, I think I would get every once in a while an episode rundown, which I was always really interested in listening to, but it never like went anywhere. Like, I didn't store up that information. So, okay, the OC. Anything else?
Well, yeah, he's actually been in some other movies. He was in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jennifer's Body, you know, that Megan Fox movie. He was in Thank You for Smoking.
Maybe that's where I know him from. Okay.
And interesting bit of trivia. He was actually going to be the Flash in the George Miller Justice League Mortal movie that was planned to come out in around 2008, 2009. They got pretty far in production of it. They're going to film in Australia, and in late 2007 is when the writer's strike happened, the most recent writer's strike in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of put the brakes on the whole project. And, you know, at the time, people were like, oh, thank God. Who wants to see the guy who directed Babe 2, Pig in the City, direct a Justice League movie? And it's not going to be Christian Bale and Brandon Routh. That's ridiculous. How can you have two different versions of the same character? Oh, I'm so glad they canceled that. Okay, this is 2007, right?
Yeah.
Fast forward, you know, 10 years later, people are like, oh, man, George Miller's the best director of all time. Mad Max Fury Road is amazing. Oh, my gosh. And people are very upset about, or, you know, the general consensus
like,
is people are not pleased about the current direction of the DC Cinematic Universe. And people are like, oh, man, if only we had George Miller to direct.
In retrospect, it seemed like a good idea. Yeah.
Well, some of the cast, I think Adam Brody would have been a great, you know, Wally West or Barry Allen. I'm not sure which Flash version he would have played. Some other casting choices were a little more questionable for that cast, but he would have been a good Flash, I think, because I think Adam Brody's a great actor, and I think he really elevates the material in this episode. If you look at his you know, story arc in this episode, it's pretty cliche, really, but his performance adds a lot of nuance to it, I think, and makes it a lot more enjoyable and believable.
Yes, I completely agree. I think that's why I liked this episode, despite, like, I had some serious problems with it. But I really liked his performance. I completely agree with you.
And you can see why he went on to stardom moving forward. Now, the OC actually started a year after this. So he, like, went straight from this into the OC.
Okay.
So he was, you know, around that same age. And you might be interested to know that Ben McKenzie, who plays Commissioner Gordon, or not Commissioner yet, but Jim Gordon on Gotham, yeah, was also a star of the OC. And also Rachel Bilson, who is Hayden Christensen's wife.
Wow.
They met on the set of Jumper, I believe. I knew they were in Jumper together. I assume that's where they met. But, so those are some of the other famous stars of the OC. Moving on to the episode itself, get into the plot here. It's revealed that Justin has been in the hospital for 5 months. He was in an accident, and he's fully recovered except for his hands. His doctor, Dr. Wells, which I found amusing since I watched The Flash. Dr. Wells is a main character on The Flash. His doctor comes by to talk to him, and because Justin's about to go back to Smallville, go back home to Smallville and be discharged. And, you know, we get a little bit of backstory here on the doctor. Apparently, he had several patients sue him for malpractice because Justin's kind of just angry at the world here. And the doctor kind of talks him down and
talks down to him as well. Talk about completely invalidating his feelings and his, like, I mean, I understand he's a surgeon, but, like, maybe don't completely invalidate the anger if you're a patient who can't do what he loves anymore.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He's a surgeon, not a psychiatrist, clearly.
That's right. Well, he made some, like, he said something about how, you know, someone told him he had the hands of a surgeon, and I audibly was like, rut-row.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Put a little red shirt on those hands.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and he gives Justin this platitude about how one door closes, another door opens, and it's like, look, people, whenever people go through hard times, do not pull out the platitudes like that, right? That is not always what people need to hear. But that's what he's feeding Justin, and then he goes off on his merry way. He's in a tux, so he's, like, on his way to go be high society because he's a doctor. And he leaves, and he's kind of a jerk, clearly, because he's talking to his wife, and she's like
another needy patient or something.
Yeah,
like,
and he's
that.
Like, well, aren't they all? It's like, okay, this guy's a jerk, right?
Yeah, it's like, uh-oh, D-bag, your chances of something evil happening to you have ratcheted way, way up.
So this is all, this framework here of how the doctor's a little crooked and non-empathetic or sympathetic, it's to make Justin more sympathetic, and I guess that kind of works. But still, even so, even though this guy's the biggest jerk in the world, right?
Yeah.
We'll not to bury the lead here. Justin has telekinetic powers, right?
Yeah.
So, but he's not a psychic, right? He's not. So how does he know? Because the doctor and his wife get in the elevator, and the elevator starts messing up, right? So I guess Justin's controlling the elevator somehow. Fine. But then, like, how does he know when he got in the elevator, when he's getting out of the elevator, right? Because his wife gets out. Well, it gets stuck, like, in between floors is, like, the worst thing ever, right? To be stuck in an elevator, right? M. Night Shyamalan made a movie about it, which I never saw because, you know, it was in the dark times of M. Night Shyamalan.
You know, actually, that was not a bad movie.
Devil?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, like, I would say it was decent.
Okay. Well, that is a step up from the recent M. Night Shyamalan stuff I've exposed myself to. So I'll check
God,
it out.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the
okay, definitely. Yeah, check it out.
In the instant queue. So the doctor and his wife, they get in the elevator. It starts going haywire. It stops. They force the doors open. They're halfway between, like, you know, one floor and the other floor, so they can crawl out the top. His wife goes first. He's about to go, and he says, "Oh, give me your hand." So he sticks his hands out to grab his wife's hand. So his wrists are outside the elevator, but his body's inside. And then right when that happens, the elevator drops, and I believe. Basically severs his hands at the wrists, huh?
Yep. Yeah, he places his hands on the edge of the floor, and I thought, oh, here it comes.
Here it is. That's my question here. How did Justin know, like, that was the time to do it, right?
I don't know. That also bothered me, because then it, like, cuts to Justin as it's, like, storming outside, because it always has to storm. You know, the weather has to match the emotional intensity of the episode. And, he, you know, he's, like, with his red marker, he's just scribbling the hand of this picture that he drew of Dr. Wells. And I was like, okay, all right. But then you're right. I was confused because later on in the episode, he doesn't do anything really like that. So it's
symbolism, you see. But but what that is a dark beginning. I don't care. Like I said, I don't care how big of a jerk this doctor is. That was over the top, Justin.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought, uh-oh. And I was like, well, this episode's named Crush, and Zach told me it was Chloe-centric, so I was already starting to have expectations for where this was going to go.
We cut to the opening credits, and we come back, and it's career day. It's Smallville High School, and we get our first line back from commercial break. Somebody tells Clark, I see you in a uniform flying. It's like, all right, there we go. Another, he's Superman. We get it. You know, that's one of those, yep. Facepalm inducing Superman references. Not subtle at all. But he's talking to the Air Force booth, and we find out that he's talking to Danny, who is Principal Kwan's son, who is in the Air Force. So he's in town to, you know, promote the Air Force at career day. Now, did we have a career day in high school, Nancy? I don't think we did. Not like this.
No, not like that. No way.
Like, we had the college center, which is like this weird room in the corner of the cafeteria that I don't believe I ever went in, other than
I didn't either.
Other than, remember when we had school dances, we would all go in there and get our pictures? Like, that was the only time I remember going in there.
Yes, I agree. That was a weird area.
And then my favorite memory of that is the 2003 homecoming dance. There was the World Series being played at the time. They had a TV on in there.
So, were all the dudes in there?
We were all watching it, like, kind of through the window. It was the Marlins and Yankees. It was a great World Series, but they had the TV on playing the World Series in the College Center.
That's amazing.
Ask Travis about it. I'm sure he remembers.
I'm sure he does. I'll ask him.
Chloe comes by, and she's talking about how she signed up to have an interview for an internship at the Daily Planet she'd be excited about. And it's through this conversation, it's revealed that Clark was supposed to get them tickets to the student journalism conference next week, and he forgot. Epic fail.
Womp womp.
To make it worse, though, like, the excuse he uses, he's like, oh, I just been so busy with Lana this week at the Talon working on my history paper. It's like, no, 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 Clark,
yeah,
no.
I facepalmed really hard on that one. Like, oh, yeah, she's going to love that answer. Good job.
And, you know, and to her credit, she doesn't laser focus in on Lana. Obviously, Lana is what really sets her off. She says, whenever Lex and Lana are around, it's like the rest of us don't exist. And she storms off. She's really upset. And that's a valid point because, you know, think about it. You know, Pete has been Clark's best friend for years. Chloe has been one of his best friends for a couple years now. Lex and Lana are brand new in his life. Lex just showed up, you know, the beginning of the season, the school year. And Lana and him just started their friendship at the beginning of the season. Because before then, before the pilot, remember, he never could interact with Lana because of her kryptonite necklace. So, but now they're like the most important people in his life. So if you were somebody's lifelong friend or long-term friend, and that kind of social dynamic changed, you would have similar attitudes. And especially you throw in the fact that Chloe obviously has a crush on Clark.
Yes. Yeah.
She has the great line, most men are from Mars, but you're from some distant galaxy I haven't even heard of, which is great, because now that is a subtle Superman reference. I like that, because he is from a distant galaxy that she's never heard of.
Right, exactly. Yeah, plus I really liked her. I think something that I really like about this show, which is something I like about watching The X-Files, is I love seeing like the dated fashion. That's something that I just really enjoy, and I was very amused by Chloe's super early 2000s haircut. It's just the best. It's kind of like a trendier, like, Jennifer Aniston haircut, I want to say, because then like a couple beats later, Lana comes into the frame and she's got like those butterfly clips that I remember every girl having at that time. It's so satisfying to relive that, like, oh yeah, people used to think that looked really awesome. Oh, good times.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Nostalgia factor is great on so many levels of this show.
Yes.
So Chloe has stormed off, and Pete says to Clark, look, man, if you take off your Lana blinders, you see that Chloe likes you.
I loved that line.
Yeah, but I like how Clark is oblivious. Like, he's naive, like, and like, people are good, naive, right? And he's also naive to the fact of, like, what's going on with people. Like, and I like that about Clark Kent and Superman. It gives him a weakness without giving him a weakness. It gives him, like, a social weakness, you know? And right. For a character as invulnerable as Superman, I like the fact that he's not, like, street smart, you know? Yes. And that really fits with his character. And he's not going out of his way to hurt Chloe's feelings. He just really is oblivious to what's going on. So
he is. But the way that he like responded to her made me prickle.
Yeah. he did not defuse the situation in a intelligent way. Well, lucky for Chloe, Justin has come back to Smallville High School. And it's revealed that he was a cartoonist for The Torch, which makes sense because, you know, he's an artist. And she's like, oh, when's the next Flaming Crow's Feet, which I guess was their cartoon column there. And he's like, ugh. Well, he holds up his hands, and he, you see his hands like in this in this cast, and he has splints on his fingers and stuff like that. And they talk a bit about his accident, and apparently he was in Hit and Run, right?
Right.
And I'm not really sure how you can be in a Hit and Run car accident and have this kind of injury. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like,
yes.
did the tires, like, did the car clip you and you fell over and the tires ran over your hands? That's the only thing I could think of.
That is exactly what I thought when I was watching this. I was like, well, how? So, yeah, maybe he, I don't know. Maybe he folded up like a bug and got his hands in the way. I'm not really sure.
So they, Chloe and Justin, you know, I give them credit here because I'm always on Smallville's case for introducing these characters where I was like, oh, hey, Justin, you're our best friend. You've been here for months. No, you haven't. This is yes. Your first episode. But, you know, he's been in the hospital for 5 or 6 months. So that's why he's been out of the picture. And it's established that Chloe and him were exchanging emails back and forth. And since he's a cartoonist for The Torch, like, that also makes sense. They have another connection there. So he's not just some random guy who shows up at the worst possible time, you know, as far as, because obviously she's upset at Clark. So she's immediately going to latch on to this guy. And because he's like, hey, can you know, you want to go out for coffee? Maybe we can catch up. And she's like, oh, she kind of looks over at Clark over there because he wants to come back and apologize. And she says, you know what? Let's go right now. I'm reevaluating my life.
Yeah, he says that and then she echoes it and like gives Clark this like meaningful look.
Then we cut to our Lex Luthor subplot and he's at his mother's grave, which is a very elaborate and very public grave, I do have to say.
Right? Like, it wasn't even in a... Where was this? Right outside, like, Luthor Corp or something?
I believe it's in Luthor Corp Plaza, so...
Oh, my God. There's so much marble.
Yeah, she's not, like, a public figure. Lionel's the public figure, so it's odd they would do that. But I understand. This is the Luthers are all about appearances, right? So I get it.
Right.
And then also, later on in the series, Lex, quote-unquote, dies a couple times, and he has a memorial to himself, and it's in the same area, in the same style, so I appreciated the continuity there of all this, you know, black marble and stuff like that. Now, they were very clever, you know, because most tombstones, they give you a date, you know, like March 30th, 1981 right. or something, right? Hers just says, you know, the years, okay?
Yes.
So we have no way of knowing what day is it. You know, that's my obsession on this podcast, figuring out what day is it. Because these kids go to school, when are the weekends, it's not football season, but they're talking about football. Lots of things that make you wonder, like, do you guys even know how school works or how football season
works? Well, and you said
works?
That the last time we recorded for Craving, you were just like, "What? When do these kids go to school? Like, what time do they get there? They stop for coffee, they're talking for an hour on the side of the road, like, that's kind of funny.
Let's stop by animal control on the way to school. It's like...
Yeah, let me look at the autopsy report. We can get to school by noon. Yeah.
So Lex is at his mother's grave, and it's revealed that it's the anniversary of her death. Lillian Luthor is her name, because of course it is, right?
Oh, okay.
Of course it's a double L. We have another visit from Lex. There's another woman there. Pamela is her name. And we don't get a lot of information about her off the bat. You can tell that there is some history there. Lex is like, what are you doing here? And she's like, the same reason you're here, to honor your mother on the anniversary of her death. And TLDR, right, we get from this conversation, she was a big part of Lex's life when he was a kid, but then disappeared, and he has a grudge against her. And that's pretty much the only explanation we get so far.
Yeah, I wrote down, like, aunt, mom's BF, like, best friend. Like, I just didn't know who she was. And I thought, I have to ask Zach if this is someone I'm supposed to recognize. Sure, okay.
We go back to Smallville High School, and we have Clark and Chloe and Justin all at the Torch. And it's very fun here. Adam Brody plays it very well, because Justin is clearly picking up on the very intense, weird vibes going on between Chloe and Clark. Because they're having what would normally be a normal conversation between a couple, two or three people. But because there's so much, like, you know, angst going on, it's layered with all this stuff. And Justin's like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to go now. You know? And he drops all his stuff because, you know, his hands are messed up. And Clark helps. And Clark finds out so much information about people by helping them pick up stuff they drop. You know, this has happened to Whitney before. It happens to other characters. So while he's gathering up Justin's things, we see that Justin has a newspaper article about his doctor who had been in that elevator accident. But he makes note of that. And also, it's revealed that Lex was able to score, of course, right? Lex was able to score Clark the tickets for the conference after all. But Chloe says, no, it's fine. Me and Justin are going to go. I'll be his plus one. Justin's like, or the three of us could go together. And Chloe's like, nope. Clark's not interested in journalism. Like, immediately shuts it down. So
I loved that.
And it is true. Like he just, I don't know why he works at the Torch, to be honest.
Well, she's, I like that she's not letting him off the hook like so easily. She's like, nope, bye. She shunned him. Like, bye, Felicia. I don't want to have anything to do with you right now.
True, but I saw that more of like, look, this is going to be a, she thought it was going to be a date for her and Clark. Now it's going to be a date for her and Justin, and she doesn't want some third wheel.
Exactly. Right. Plus, I wrote down, it is annoying that Clark, now that he doesn't have her passive attention, he wants it. Ugh.
But that isn't that true, though? Like, I know it's a trope, but there is some truth to that. You know, there's...
Oh, no, there is. That's why I said, ugh. Like, he didn't even know that that was a thing he had or had passively, but now that he's aware of it and he doesn't have it, he wants it.
So the next scene is at the Kent farm. Lana stops by to pick up some pies from Martha. Okay, so because, you know, she's running a coffee shop now. She's got to keep food in stock. There's so much going on. There's so many dynamics in this conversation. It's kind of emotionally overwhelming because Lana, over the course of season one, she has really come around to liking Clark and not liking her current boyfriend, Whitney, so much. So she's into Clark. She knows Clark likes her. But Clark has actually, over the course of season one, more or less accepted, you know, and come to a place of, I don't know, contentment that Lana is with Whitney and that's the way it's going to be. But they start talking about how, well, Chloe likes Clark and Clark thinks he might like Chloe too. And this kind of disappoints Lana, but Clark doesn't pick up on this because why would it disappoint Lana? Because she's in a relationship with a boyfriend. So there's so much going on in this conversation. I do feel like it was very well directed because when the scene first starts out, we start slowly zooming in on each character in their close up. And then as they continue to talk about the conversation and the future, the potential, you know, relationship or whatever of Clark and Lana kind of evaporates that potential because Chloe gets brought up a lot and Clark's talking about how he likes her and wants to do something about it. The close-ups kind of slowly zoom out and it kind of symbolizes them growing apart. And I really like that. It's a nice directorial touch there by James Marshall. So.
Yeah, I wrote down before I thought about it, before I thought it through, I was like, is Lana taken in this episode? Ask Zach. Still with Whitney? So dumb. Why aren't she and Clark admitting that they like each other? Then I wrote teenagers. Blah. So,
hey, this is high school, you know?
I know. I had to remind myself. I was like, okay, just remember if you were a teenager, these things are important. You know, like teenagers talking about liking each other. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. But yeah, okay. So then I remembered, or I think there was something in the episode that prompted me to be like, oh, that's right. She and Whitney are still together. She's not really like into it, but she's just kind of sticking around. So.
Yeah, well, his father had been sick, you know, well, as you have found out in this episode for sure. His father had been ill with heart trouble and she had really been his support. But, you know, I'm keeping a time to talking about what day is it. I might not know what day it is, but I can at least keep track of how many days have passed. And I'm trying to do that in this episode at least. So we've established that this is the second day. Okay, this is the day two of Justin being back in Smallville. Okay. Then we get another scene before we go to commercial, and it's Justin, and we see him drawing Chloe with telekinesis with some really questionable CGI pencils and erasers. I don't know if you noticed the early 2000 CGI, right?
Oh, so bad, so good.
I did like how he had, and this was a nice touch, very subtle, but good job on the set director's part. He had a yearbook page next to his canvas, like with a picture of Chloe for reference. And I like that. It's like, you know what? Even a supernatural artist like that needs something, can't draw it from memory, right? You need some kind of reference. So that was a nice little touch. Let me come back, and this is day three now. Because I've been able to, with the combination of dialogue and wardrobe changes, I've been able to establish this is our third day with Justin being back in their lives. And he's talking to Pete about Justin in the hallway, which is a terrible place to talk about things like this, Clark, because he mentions to Pete that he found that newspaper article about Justin's doctor. And Justin's stuff. He's like, don't you think that's weird that he's carrying it around? And then Justin is like standing nearby and overhears him and confronts him. He's like, you always talk about people behind their back, Clark? It's like, ooh, just got found out, brother.
It was the best. I was like, oh, got called on it. Whoops.
And it's true. It's like, yeah, that's legit. Like, Clark, why are you going to be suspicious of this guy? And it's clearly like, look, something's up with Justin, sure. But it's coming from a place of jealousy, for sure. You know, from Clark. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, that's something I wrote down. I was like, okay, so I guess that's just sort of the thrust of the show now, is that he'll immediately suspect someone his own age of murder. Like, wow. I was like, I don't know if I would necessarily immediately suspect somebody. And I think that is only, like you said, motivated because of jealousy. unfortunately, turns out to be correct.
I know, right? It kind of undercuts the whole point.
It really does.
It's funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting you mentioned murder. Part of the tally board I have here is Smallville faculty and student deaths. Okay, and we'll get to we'll get to one later on here. Spoilers, right? But I was actually surprised. I mean, because we're nearing the end of season one here. There's been almost no Smallville High School faculty and student deaths. Because I feel like there's a misconception. There's a cliche misconception about Smallville that. People were turning to meter freaks and dying every week in Smallville, you know? And really, there's only been one student death so far, and they took it very seriously. They had, like, a memorial wall tour. And I know at some point the death toll is going to start filing up. But at least in the first season, they respected, you know, death. You know, because in all these genre shows, it's so easy to be like, oh, yeah, so-and-so died, or have these crazy stuff happens and people die left and right. I mean, look at the X-Files, right? How many, I think maybe like two people on average die every episode of the X-Files, right?
Oh, so true. At least you got to generate those corpses.
Yeah, and you get desensitized to it. So I'm glad we haven't gotten to that point yet with Smallville.
Yeah.
So we get our next scene with Pamela. She shows up at the Luther Mansion, and Lex is like, what the hell are you doing here? It's like, Lex, did you not know she was there? Do you not have security? Whatever. Maybe you let her in. I don't know. But we get more exposition about her. She was, to answer your questions earlier, Nancy, she was hired help, basically, a nanny, for lack of a better word, for Lex. Yeah. Because Lex's mother, Lillian, was in poor health near the end of her life, and they needed help around to help look after Lex while Lillian was ill. And then she basically walked out of his life after his mother died, and he's always held that against her. And understandably so, because from his perspective, you know, what the hell, lady? You know, I thought you promised my mom, because it's implied. It's never actually spelled out, but everything is, like, communicated through inference and implication that she promised Lillian that she would look after Lex after she was gone, and she didn't. So, of course, Lex is going to have this huge chip on his shoulder from this.
Yeah, I mean, after that, I was like, oh, okay, I'm got it. It makes sense now. But I did think he was kind of, I don't know, I felt sorry for her when he refused to forgive her.
Right. I do like how she calls him Alexander. That's a nice touch. You know what? No one else ever calls him that. But having known him as a boy, that makes sense. And she basically reveals she had to leave because Lionel said that he would disinherit Lex if Pamela ever came around again. And Lex is, you know, he's skeptical. He doesn't really know what angle she's playing. I mean, he hasn't seen this woman in 10 years, right? So
right.
But of course, he's always suspicious of his father, so he will follow up on that. But she asks for forgiveness, and he tells her to get out. So it's, you're right, I mean, it is, you do feel sorry for her, but you see his point of view as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And but you also kind of feel like, you're like, oh, I'm not getting the whole story,
right?
Like, there's obviously something that's going unsaid or that he doesn't know.
So then our next scene is Whitney stops by the Talon, and you know, Clark and Lana are there, and Whitney he's in such a good mood. He's got tickets for him and Lana to do something he's all excited about. It's nice to see Whitney happy for a change, because he's been, with all the stuff going on with his dad in recent episodes, he's been kind of a downer character.
Yeah.
But you can clearly see on Lana's face and her body language that she is not really into it,
right?
Which is sad, you know.
Well, I mean, it's sad because she just won't, like, it's just so understandable why she hasn't left him, even if she's not really happy with him, because she just feels kind of guilty and she wants to be there for him. Like, I think that's why a lot of women stay in relationships, so they don't really, well, men too, I shouldn't do that. It's really anyone who stays in a relationship where they kind of feel like, it's not like they're being forced to, but they just sort of feel like circumstances have made them have to stay there. I definitely had some empathy for both of them, because it's like, Whitney doesn't know at all that that's how she feels, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it made me kind of sad. Although I wrote down talking about their lerv, so I guess I was feeling a little jocular there.
Yeah, you know, it's, I won't say everyone's been in a situation like that. I mean, hopefully no one out there has to go through a situation like that where they're either, in either party. Right, you don't want to be the person that's falling out of love with your significant other, and you certainly don't want to be the person who your significant other falls out of love with. Right, you certainly don't want to be that guy.
That's a crappy situation all around,
and it's unfortunate. So you feel for him here, because these last episodes of season one really turn what you wanted to see happen on the show on its head. Because for so long you're like, yeah, Clark and Lana, we want Clark and Lana to get together. That's a girl of his dreams, and Whitney's this jerk who's in the way. He's an obstacle in the way of Clark living happily ever after. But then through the course of the season, Whitney becomes more of a three-dimensional character. Chloe really comes into the picture as a romantic interest for Clark, and that's starting to blossom here. So there's all these other factors, and you get to the point where, yeah, Lana finally likes Clark, but you're like, yeah, but I don't want to see them together now. Like, we really did miss that window of opportunity. So,
aww.
So Justin gives Chloe his painting that he painted of her, and he reveals that he had a crush on her for a long time, which once again we're referencing the name of the episode, which it's Smallville. It doesn't do this every episode, but I do like it when it does. Just the meta in me really enjoys it when they say the name.
Yeah, I was gonna ask if you had a tally of how often dropped that in there.
That's a great idea, Nancy. Maybe I should. I should consider
you
that.
You don't have too many episodes to catch up on.
That's true. If I'm going to do that, now's the time. I'll reach out to the listeners. Does anyone know? Could anyone send me an email of a list?
I'm sure someone knows.
Please let me know. Seriously. Why do the work myself when you guys can do it for me? Please let me know how many episodes mention the episode title in it. And just for season one, moving on from here, I can count it. But that's a really good. I thought about that too. Like, maybe I should add that to the tally board because that's just an interesting thing.
Right. Well, it's just fun data. It's fun to collect and know about. It's cool.
So the other thing going on here, there's a lot of stuff going on in this scene with Chloe and Justin. He reveals that when he got hit by the car, that she was the only thing he could think about, which is, I don't know, I feel like that was more of a line than an actual thing. You know, he's just dropping a line on Chloe. Did you believe that?
No.
Man, skeptical girl right there. But Chloe's buying it, though. Chloe's buying it. And, you know, and she's more emotionally vulnerable right now. So I told to get, you know, normally Chloe would probably be more level-headed about all this.
Right.
But because Clark has screwed around with her emotions pretty much the entire time.
Well, and you know what? That makes sense. Because there's lots of, you know, those kind of situations happen a lot where you're feeling down about a particular thing or a situation or relationship or a friendship or whatever. And then something else comes along or you meet someone new or someone old comes back into your life and you're hanging out with them. And, you know, I mean, that happens a lot. So I can see her being like, oh, thank God.
Right.
Like, finally, like, right when I'm being like, I'm totally frustrated with Clark, here's my friend who's finally well enough to come back to school. Like, it makes sense to me. I don't blame her at all.
Well, unfortunately, though, there's a couple of factors that are going on with Justin that she's unaware of. One is, see, he's not a meteor freak. They never explain how he got his powers. Okay,
right. I really thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, you were just waiting for the reveal.
Yeah.
See, give Craven credit. At least they explain that Amy Adams was drinking the kryptonite shakes, and you get an A to V correlation to why she has these abilities.
Well, I was thinking about that episode and expecting it. So,
you know, that's the thing with Smallville. Like, you say, oh, good, they finally got away from meteor freaks and meteor rocks causing the powers. I'm like, well. I don't know, but that's the rules they've established in this universe. So shouldn't they talk about the meteorites? Like, it's like, if you're gonna have somebody with powers in Smallville, they need to have gotten them from the meteor rocks, right? This is not magic has not been introduced on the show yet, so there's only so many.
And I mean,
explanations.
That's what they've established, right? Previously in the other episodes. So why would it be different now?
Well, I feel like they think they're getting away from, like, oh, cool, isn't this cool? We didn't use meteor rocks this time. Like, no, you don't get it. Like. You need to use meteorites because, like, as you said, Nancy, that's what they've established. So I don't know what kind of BS pseudoscience they could have concocted to say, oh, well, after he got hit by the car accident, he fell into a ditch which had meteor rocks in it, and it was raining, so it became liquefied. You know, who knows, right?
Something.
Something, because there's no explanation. He offers a little bit of an explanation later, but we'll get into it then. Him and Chloe start making out, you know, and we did this like 360 pan around them, and we see clearly blue screen, but it's fine. of all the little office items, everything on like the torch desks and stuff is floating because, you know, that's kind of a cute thing. I feel like I've seen that in some other fantasy or sci-fi thing where like someone's happy and like everything starts floating around them. I'm not sure, but I'm sure some television show or fantasy movie or something has done that.
I agree. It looked familiar. I agree with that.
But then Chloe, you know, obviously Chloe notices this and like, hey, what's going on? And he tells her, and to his, you know, delight, she's not freaked out by it. And in fact, as she says, you know, believe it or not, I've seen a lot weirder stuff. So
no kidding. Oh, I do have one thing to add, if I could.
Yeah.
Well, two things, I should say.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had a pang of nostalgia when they were in the Torch office and I saw the lime green iMac.
Yes. Because
that was my first, like, real computer. We also had a lime green iMac. It was named Natasha. And she was the best computer ever. So I liked that. But then I was thinking, when he gives her the picture of herself, Chloe's not curious how he can draw when he said he couldn't the day before.
Mm-hmm. See, like, once again, the emotional clouds that are clouding her judgment. Now, he did say it took him all night.
Right.
Which is a lie, because we saw him do it in like 5 minutes. And I must say, look, I know he's just a high schooler. I know he's just a cartoonist. It wasn't the most photorealistic painting of Chloe, I must say. I feel like they didn't get her nose quite right. Like, her nose, for one. And I've never seen her wear, that's like Lana's shirt, right? But anyway.
I know, right? Yeah, exactly.
Let's nitpick this to death. I totally picked up on that as well.
Okay.
But then, you know, Clark comes in and ruins this romantic moment.
Naturally.
As he does. And he's like, Chloe, can I speak to you outside?
Yeah.
And so they walk out. And meanwhile, a plot point here that I don't think we've mentioned yet is, you know, Justin had mentioned to Chloe that they never found the hit and run driver that had hit him, and he just remembered a partial plate DDI, right?
Yes.
And he said the police couldn't find anything, and this has been, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. So she had used her contacts, because, you know, she has contacts, put those wheels in motion, right?
Right.
And then when Clark and Chloe walk out, speaking of nostalgic, right, fax machine.
Right? Oh, I wrote, woo, faxes! Gotta love the fax machine.
Were those even a thing in 2002? I mean, I thought emails and printers had replaced that.
I guess
that.
For, like, a school that doesn't have a lot of, like, funding or money going towards, like, the school paper, probably.
They do have the brand new iMac, though, so I don't know.
Oh, touche! All right, well, I guess that's what they spent the budget on.
Yes, they had to cut corners somewhere. Like, well, we can get the iMac, but we're going to have to stick with the fax machine for a while, guys. Is that okay? So this fax comes in, and they've identified the driver who hit Justin. So that's the last we see of that, but we know where that's going. It's nowhere good, because we've seen he has a mind for revenge. Like, he thinks the doctor may have messed up. Like obviously he was in an accident. And, you know, and I'll say the doctor's a huge jerk, but he has a valid point to Justin. He's like, hey, you were in an accident. Like, don't blame me.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I didn't do anything about it.
I don't know. I guess Justin felt like the doctor, because he had those malpractice things on his record, he could have done better, and that's why he decided to punish the doctor the way he did. So he's got a mind for revenge, so we know nothing good will come of this. But in the hallway, you know, Clark and Chloe have a good conversation, and I feel this way throughout the entire series of Smallville. I don't know if it's the way the characters are written, or you know, it's probably a testament to Tom Welling and Allison Mack having great chemistry. Their scenes together always feel real. Like, there's real emotion in their scenes. And he tries to bring up to Chloe the mysterious stuff around Justin, which in any other episode, she would be all over. She'd be like, yeah, you're right, Clark. But since she's, you know, her judgment is clouded, and she's kind of has a chip on her shoulder against Clark right now, she is not very receptive to it, and she shuts him down immediately. He's like, you know what? I was just trying to look out for you, Chloe, and he walks off. And she kind of rails into him about how he's only around, like, as a savior complex, you know?
Yep, I liked that. Plus, I really didn't like when he ascribed her motivations, like, for what she was doing to just her desire for him. That made me so mad.
He did take that a step too far, didn't he? Like, oh, Clark, I was with you up until then. He's like, I just don't want you to be with him because you're mad at me. Oh, no, don't say this. Come on.
Oh, the truth comes out. The truth comes out. Yeah. I enjoyed that. But at the same time, I also wrote, it's annoying because I know that Justin will exit the show after this episode, probably, and Clark will, quote, be right. So that's annoying. Mm. Like, I know they're setting up Chloe to be wrong.
Well, as a guy, I must say, I think we are usually right in those situations. Come on.
I'm not even touching that.
Moving on, we get the confrontation here between Justin and the hit-and-run driver, and it's a good reveal, because if you weren't, I paused the DVD because I knew it was going to happen. I looked at the printout on the fax machine, and I saw, oh, okay, they did tell us who it was then, but if you're not...
Yeah, I looked at it. I saw Quan really quick.
Right,
I was like,
ooh. Uh-oh. On a standard definition 4x3, you know, 20-inch television in 2002, I did not immediately see... it was. So it's kind of a reveal. We see that the station wagon pull up to a driveway, a trash can is in the way, so the person has to get out of the car to move it. So it's a smart move by Justin. you know, in a serial killer way. It's a smart move by Justin to force his victim out of the vehicle.
Really creepy.
We see the car has DDI's, the first license plate, so we know exactly what's going on here because those letters have been mentioned before. And it's Principal Kwan, and you're like, whoa, did Principal Kwan hit and run Justin? Like, this took a turn, right? And Justin starts, you know, ranting at him and says, you know, about how he just left him there, didn't even stop. And he does, this is the only explanation we get, only attempt at an explanation we get for his abilities. He says, you know, in the hospital, he discovered he could move things with his mind because he was in a full body cast. And he says, quote, a way to compensate for the motor skills I'd lost with my hands, unquote. And I guess they're trying to play this up as some kind of Daredevil-esque thing. You know?
Yeah.
But that's completely wrong. That's completely off the mark, right?
Yeah, because it's not something that he, like, it's not essential to his survival, like hearing or seeing. using his hand. That I'd believe it if he was blind or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah. And what is the best, who would you say is the most best comic book analog for this kind of power? Would it be like Jean Grey, or I mean, because she's telepathic too, but like, who is like pure telekinesis in the comic books?
I was trying to. Was there anybody on? I don't know. In comic books, was there anybody like that on Heroes?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, and that's exactly what I went to. It's Sylar, right?
Oh, yeah, that is Sylar.
But right. People see, this is what people don't understand. Oh, Hero, I could talk for 4 hours about Heroes, but as could you.
yeah.
Telekinesis is not Sylar's power. Everyone thinks it is, right? That's the first power he stole from that dopey-looking guy. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then say, yeah. So because his power is to understand other people's powers, analyze them, and be able to use them, which is a very, very interesting power.
Agreed.
But that was his first, you know, the first power he took was telekinesis, and he's used the telekinesis since then to acquire his other powers. And then, of course, in season 2, where Sylar lost all his powers and got them back, he got his telekinesis. See, I'm ranting now, but I got to say this. I got to get this off my chest. Okay, so in season 2, they infect Sylar with the disease, and he loses all his powers, right? But then he uses Mohinder's sister's blood. Okay, look, if you guys watch Smallville, you probably watched Hero, so you know what I'm talking about. So he injects himself with Mohinder's sister's blood, right, or the serum they develop from it, right? That cures him, right? So then he uses a telekinesis, and he gets like a can in an alleyway, and it comes to his hand. You're like, oh, he's like, I'm back, you know? So like, oh, Sylar got all his powers back. That's crazy, because he had acquired so many powers in season 1.
Yeah.
But then moving forward in like season 3, he didn't have a lot of the powers in season 1, and then everybody said, oh, well, that's because he didn't get back all his powers, he just got back his original power. And they're like, no, telekinesis was not his original power. And then they were like, oh, well, he only got back his first power, because that was the one that was with him the long. I'm like, you guys do not know what you're talking about. Like, come on. Anyway, that was a little rabbit trail there, but that really annoyed me. But telekinesis, right?
yes.
I know Jean Grey has it. You know, I don't. To be honest, I'm not that familiar with other Marvel
characters. I can't think of anyone else who just has straight telekinesis.
Yeah, maybe there's somebody in DC I'm forgetting. But anyway, it's a good power, obviously.
Yeah.
But it can be used for evil, as here, because, you know, Justin, he has a mind for revenge. So he pins Kwan up against the garage door with like the lamp posts in the driveway, which is creepy. And Kwan's like, it wasn't me. You know, and you're thinking, is he lying here? Is this a mistake? What's going on? You're not really sure, because you think to yourself, no way Principal Kwan hit and run a student, right? I mean, I know he wasn't a very well-developed character, but he's just a guy. Yeah. You know, it'd be quite a dark turn.
I definitely felt like that was going to be a gotcha. Like, that was the villain making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, he says, you know what it feels like to be hit with a 2,000-pound car? And he drives the car straight through the driveway and hits Principal Kwan, and he dies. Like, he kills Principal Kwan. So that's, I mean, gosh, this episode is a lot darker than I remember. I remember, it's the one with Adam Brody and Clark and Chloe kind of get together, and he has telekinesis. Yeah, that's great. I'm looking forward to this one. And, like, we got doctors getting their hands cut off. We got principals being murdered. I mean, that is dark, right? And this is plus one to the Smallville faculty death count.
I know, and then a minority principal on top of everything else. I was like, really?
Yo, Nick would not be pleased. At the last episode, Nick was very excited that we had an Asian guy running for class president. So Nick is not going to be happy when he with this episode. But yeah, that's a valid point.
Oh man, yeah. So then we cut to what was it? Is that the barn scene where Clark is reading Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and Lex shows up?
Have you ever read that book? Have you read that book?
No.
I haven't either.
No. I thought about reading it just because... But then I didn't think there was really anything very useful in it, probably.
Right. And that, you know, Lex immediately, it's funny because Clark knows, like, it's because we've all read things or whatever, like, that we're like, okay, can anyone see me that I'm reading this particular book? I hope not.
Yeah, exactly.
So when Lex shows up, Clark kind of hides it, but Lex totally sees it. And he starts questioning him about it. Lex says, what's the problem? And Clark says, I've got these two amazing friends who both happen to be girls. And Lex says, for argument's sake, let's call them Lana and Chloe. It's like, who are you trying to fool?
Dang, son.
Oh, man. But, yeah. You know, Lex has some perspective here on love for Clark, which is nice. And he reveals that he only loved two women in his life. One died, and the other betrayed him. Now, I remember back at the time, people were debating, like, is he talking about Victoria? Victoria was his girlfriend for a few episodes in season one. Like, and she betrayed him. And they're like, I hope he's not talking about that. It's like, no. Listen, this is episode specific. One is his mother. And the other would be Pamela, because he sees her abandoning him as a betrayal. Yeah.
Right.
But I can see how fans would misinterpret it, because, you know, Victoria was around for a long time this season like that. But, you know, like Lex, you know, Lex, as he says, some people are just meant to be alone. And Lex is always a more powerful figure when he's alone. You know, he doesn't require, you know, there's no need for a power couple for Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor is his own power couple, you know.
Right.
So this scene is actually interrupted by Martha. And she comes in, and she's really, you know, she's upset, and she's obviously visibly shaken. And Clark's like, "What's wrong?" And she's like, "It's Principal Kwan. He's dead." It's like, "Damn," you know.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting him to be dead, because I mean, if you think about it, I thought maybe Justin would just horribly maim him or something. But I can't believe. I mean, I guess I should have known from the beginning when he killed the doctor.
Well, he didn't kill it. He didn't kill the doctor. He just severed his
hands.
Oh,
that's right. He didn't. That's okay. So I think that's what I was expecting. And then when she said he was dead, I was like, "Rut-row." he's ratcheted up the crazy.
So executive producer Miles Miller had this to say about the death of Principal Kwan, and this is, again, as most of my behind-the-scenes quotes come from, are from Smallville, Season 1, The Official Companion by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. He had this to say, "Al and I always thought it's good to kill off regular characters, because viewers don't expect it. They're surprised when you do it, and then they basically never know what to expect. We were quite big fans of the series Millennium, and they had an episode where they killed off one of the leads. It was so shocking, and it's a really good way to keep everyone on their toes." Now, obviously, Nancy, you're a huge X-Files fan. We both are. Did you ever watch Millennium?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't, because that's when I was mad and irritated about the direction that X-Files was going. Oh. Like, without Mulder and some other business. So,
hear you. I'm right there with you. I think every fan knows your pain. Interesting that they mentioned Millennium here. And then also Hiro Kanagawa, who's the actor who played Principal Kwan. He had this to say about getting killed off. "I get killed off quite a lot. It wasn't a complete surprise. Either Principal Kwan was going to develop, or since he had been in peril so many times, it seemed quite obvious that he was targeted to be killed off. I've had some spectacular deaths in my career, and I guess that Principal Kwan went in a fittingly spectacular way." So at least he had a good attitude about it.
Jeez.
And speaking of Hiro Kanagawa here, he's been in a lot of shows. He's been in the X-Files. He was actually in, most recently, the most recent thing I saw him in was in the season premiere of the X-Files, season 10. He was like the head scientist working on the spaceship, the hybrid spaceship.
I kept thinking he looks super familiar.
Well, he's been in a lot of shows. He's been in Highlander, Mantis, The X-Files, Millennium, First Wave, 7 Days, Dark Angel, and The Lone Gunman. So he has his X-Files credentials are quite high. He's been in all three X-Files series. He even made The Lone Gunman cut. So that's the end of Principal Kwan. And then we cut to Smallville High School, and they're kind of scrambling to assemble like a memorial issue for Principal Kwan here in the office. And Clark goes to comfort Chloe, but then things, once again, Clark, he never sticks to landing in these emotional conversations, because, you know, he's comforting her and trying to help. She's a little resistant because they're in a bad spot right now. But then he kind of immediately goes into accusing Justin of, you know, being involved in this somehow. But I don't know. I guess he could have handled it better. But, I mean, the facts are right there. And Chloe's just ignoring him. He's like, "Did you ever get a fax from, you know, DPS? He's like, "No, it never came in." He's like, "Yes, it did." He checked the fax machine. "Here it is right here. DDI. Yeah. That's the same license plate as Principal Kwan's car is the driver that hit Justin.
And then here's the timestamp, so I knew it came." Well, yeah. Well, Justin was here.
Right, right. Because it's a fax machine. So it prints out that second paper that that tells
that has
you when
all
it arrived.
The information. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
for,
man.
For those of you that don't remember faxes,
yeah.
There might be some of you. I don't know.
Now, she immediately, like, ignores all his warnings. And she, yep. You know, Clark has Lana blinders on right now. So, Chloe has Justin blinders on, right? The guy can do no wrong.
I would, yes, I agree with that. And then she says to him, like, what are you getting at? Like, really, Chloe? You can't deduce. And I know that they do that on purpose in shows for, like, exposition. But, like, come on. You're not stupid. Like, you can't. He just laid it all out for you. You know what he's saying.
Well, I could say it again.
Yeah.
This does not help to restore the Clark-Chloe relationship. Then we cut an unexpected scene from John Glover as Lionel Luther. Now, I saw his name in the credits, and I had completely forgotten that he was in this episode. Season one is before he was a regular character. He would be an occasional guest star and pop in from time
to
time.
He's not a regular?
No,
okay.
No. He becomes a regular starting next season. And, yeah, so he pops in and check in on Lex. And of course, I say this every time they have a scene, but it's always true. John Glover and Michael Rosenbaum have excellent chemistry together. All their scenes together are so great. The acting, the writing, everybody's on their A game for these Luther scenes.
And agreed.
Of course, he's reading out of some poetry book. You know, it's so high society, right?
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yeah, you can tell. Like, there's that, Lex has, like, a complicated relationship, obviously, with his father. But does he like him?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. I just wasn't sure if it was one of those things where he couldn't decide if he liked him or not, or he doesn't like his father, but he just deals with him.
Well, they have, you know, you can love some people and not like them. I think that's...
Oh,
I think that's
yeah, I have a lot of experience with that.
Okay. I know, right? We all do on certain levels, right?
Yeah.
Lex, it comes down to Lex wants to be loved and accepted by his father, but at the same time, he doesn't like the kind of person his father is, so he knows that in order to be accepted by him, he has to be a certain kind of person that he doesn't want to be. It's a very complicated relationship, and, you know, as someone who hadn't really seen, I think this is the first time you've seen Lionel Luther in the show, you kind of picked up on those complicated vibes just from this one scene, right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. See, one small sample size tells you everything you need to know about the relationship. And Lex is, you know, Lex is questioning Lionel. He's, you know, about, like, so is it true what Pamela told me? Were you going to disinherit me? he kind of says, are you here to disinherit me? Because Pamela had come to pay him a visit. And obviously, right. that's what Lionel has come to check in on. Now, he starts it off with the pretense that, oh, we decided to sell Cadmus Labs. And that was actually a subplot from earlier in the season. The reason I bring it up is Cadmus Labs is actually a big, plays a big role in the comic books, in the Superman comic books. That's where they cloned Superman with Superboy in the comic books after the death of Superman. So there's a lot. Comic fans would recognize it, is what I'm trying to say. And,
sure.
And it does come back again in season 10 as well. So interesting they mentioned that. So always good to see a Lex Lionel scene. And, you know, since Clark is on his own here, Chloe and him are still having trouble. So he goes to investigate Principal Kwan's death by himself. Just kind of walks up to the house, walks in the garage, starts looking around.
Right.
And then he sees Danny, Principal Kwan's son, there. And I'm like, good. He should run into someone. He just goes and walks up to a crime scene in a residential house. You know what I mean? Pretty forward on Clark's part.
Oh yeah, when he turns around, he's like, "What are you doing here?" I thought, "Yeah, what are you doing here? Like, how are you going to explain this?"
It's like, "Oh, I was just looking around. Like, what did he hope to accomplish by going to a crime? Like, the car's gone."
I mean, immediately was like, "Oh, great! You're like contaminating a crime scene. Good job."
So Clark and Danny start talking here, and it's revealed. And I'm not sure exactly how. Wasn't clear how this came to light, but Clark pretty much deduces that Principal Kwan wasn't the guy that hit Justin. It was Danny. He was in town. He was driving his dad's car.
Right.
I don't know how I feel about this, because do you think Principal Kwan knew that his son did it and was protecting him? Because Danny even says his dad was just trying to protect me.
Yes, I definitely think that's what happened.
Like, that's like... Man,
that's not good either. Like, that's like, horrible.
The cover-up is almost worse than the crime. Right? Because you could have played it off where, I don't know how you could reveal it, but you could have been like, yeah, it was Principal Kwan, but he really didn't see Justin at all, or even some kind of accident. Maybe they could have done some security camera footage thing. I don't know, right? But...
Yes, I know. I was just really, I was like, oh man, he knew? Because I was hoping that, like, it's even more tragic when, you know, Principal Kwan was just, like, the patsy for that one.
Yeah.
He just happened to be caught. You know, he was the wrong Kwan.
Right, the wrong Kwan.
But yeah,
that's a great short story title, or perhaps a band, like a cover band, The Wrong Kwan.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I was just kind of like, oh man, he covered up for him. And then I thought, you're a freaking adult. Why is your dad covering for you?
Yeah, you're in the Air Force, man. What are you, like, 25 years old? Yeah.
For real? Yeah, like, why did you not fess up to, like, I understand that the consequences will be crappy, but, like, you, like, ruined this dude's life. Like, you should take responsibility for that. Yeah, yeah, I was a little judgy after that.
Yeah, it's like, I would have, I don't know how they could have resolved it better, but maybe he could have, I think maybe he should have said, if they could have left out the part where he said his dad was just trying to protect him, he should have said, yeah, I never told my dad or something like that. I wanted to keep it to myself.
Yeah, like keep Dr. Quan, like Dr. Quan. I don't know why I want to keep saying that. Principal Quan.
Principal Quan.
it seemed like that would have been better if he'd been completely ignorant, you know,
because yeah.
He doesn't seem like the kind of character just from this episode that would have like tolerated that,
yeah,
you know?
And it just would have taken one line of dialogue, you know?
Yeah, just to fix it real quick.
So we cut to Chloe at Justin's house, snooping around his room as girls do. Help me out here, guys. No.
Again, not picking that one up.
Well, but this is before smartphones, so Chloe couldn't go through his iPhone. So, of course, she goes through his room. Right. I'm only half kidding about this stuff.
I know you are. But well, I mean, you know, it makes sense. She's an investigative journalist.
Listen,
she's
I speak from
curious.
Personal experience, okay? But anyway, can you tell? Can you tell? Anyway, she's going through his stuff, and he has these very detailed cartoon panels of the accident with the doctor, and then also the accident with Principal Kwan. So pretty much Chloe has put the, well, I mean, it's right there, right? I mean, that's, I don't know, if that's not evidence, I don't know what is.
Right.
But she hears him showing up, so she quickly puts the book back, and they share a brief little scene, and she's like, oh, did you hear about Principal Kwan? He's like, yeah, that's crazy, huh? It's like, oh, man, what a bad person.
Right? Like, his tone completely does not measure up. Like, it fails so hard.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, boy. She's, like, inching towards the door.
She's like, oh, you know what? I forgot. I have to go see Clark at his house. I'll talk to you later. And, she runs out, and first of all, Chloe, you actually went to Clark's house. Why did you do that?
I know. That drove me crazy. I was like, okay, that was a little obvious way to get out, but okay. And then she shows up at the bar, and I'm like, oh, girl, no.
Yeah, it's that's not very genre savvy, I should say, from Chloe. You expect
Agreed.
More out of her. So she leaves. So, but here's the kicker, though. She walks out, and Justin looks at his easel where he had a sketchbook, and he looks at it, and the expression on his face changes, and then he sees that it's turned on its side, and he picks it up to where it's sitting on its bottom, and clearly Chloe had not put it back correctly.
Right.
So it's like
not.
There it is. You know, that's why you know, kids. That's why when I go through people's stuff, I make sure I meticulously put it back exactly the way it was before, so these situations don't happen. But moving on.
Yeah, I mean that's like snooping 101. You always leave it how you found it.
Well, I know she was in a rush and she had to put it back, so that made sense. But that was the kicker there. Then we cut to the Talon, and Martha and Clark are talking, and it's revealed here that Clark convinced Danny to turn himself in, and Clark said it's sad his father's dead. And now he's probably going to jail. I'm like, man, this episode is dark.
For real,
so
I was
dark.
Like, dang, man.
I just wanted to watch a super young Superman adventure show. And then we got mutilation and death and
no, man, you're getting the consequences
jail
of
time.
Your
this is man. People say Batman v Superman is dark and gritty. Anyway, Chloe calls Clark at the Talon, which is, you know, kind of funny that she calls him there because that's the place that he's always at and she's always complaining about him being at. But she does say that she called all around and was looking for him, which further goes to show that Clark does not have a cell phone yet in Smallville, obviously. And
yes,
she says, Clark,
clearly.
I'm sorry, you were right. Justin's behind everything. I know how he did all this stuff. And as she's on the phone, the cell phone flies out of her hand and Justin has arrived because she told him where to find her. What an idiot.
Right.
Okay.
And then I was like, ugh, then we damsel Chloe, gross.
Well,
of course we do.
You know, I had this thought. How do you think Justin got over there? Does he drive a car with his telekinesis? I mean, I'm just curious.
I have no idea. Also, how did he find, does he, like, know where Clark lives? Does everyone know where Clark lives? Like, is Smallville that small?
The town is called Smallville. Okay, so.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And he really goes into, like, complete creeper mode. I mean, look, the guy has psychotic problems, right?
Yes, says, clearly.
How could you betray me? How could you betray what we had? I'm like, this is like a week, man. Just got your freshman in high school. You're like 15 years old. Chill, all right? It's like you act like she's been married to you for 10 years or something, right?
Yeah, but that's what all of those creepy, like, self-professed nice guys do. where they feel like they're owed stuff, and if they don't get it, they go into like complete meltdowns.
There you go. I mean, hey, can't argue with that. So
creepy.
And I do not speak from personal experience on that, just for the record.
No, of course you don't.
So he's kind of toying with Chloe. He's throwing her around the barn with his telekinesis, and she starts to run away, and he feels the need to say these one-liners, right? And he's like,
oh yeah, well, you gotta soliloquize, right?
Yeah,
you
he's
got
like,
to.
That's what I like about you, Chloe. You're a fighter. I'm like, God, what a psychopath, right? What a sociopath.
So creepy. It's like he's a cat. He's gonna play with his food before he eats it.
Right, exactly. And then he knocks her out with a horseshoe, which is like
ironic.
Well, strategically placed horseshoe. I don't know why he decided, like, oh, this is the most effective weapon I can use to incapacitate her. But what this is a knockout to keep Clark's secret, and that's plus one. That's another category we have on this mobile tally board. So this is to knock out Chloe so she doesn't see Clark show up and use his powers.
That makes sense.
This is a trope on Smallville, and when we do the tally board here at the end when we wrap up, we'll say how many we have, but this is a trope that happens a lot on Smallville. So Clark busts in, and Justin's about to, I guess,
chop her up with a chainsaw. Oh my God. Like, it's like, for real? Oh my God. Like, he's gone full on, like, Ted Bundy. Like, he's crazy.
Is that not excessive, right?
That's so excessive. He couldn't just, like, I mean, he could have just knocked her on the head hard enough to give her, like, a hemorrhage and she could die that way. You don't have to, like, chop her up with a chainsaw. My God. Yeah, it's a little excessive.
Well,
it's just a little bit.
And, like, what was he going to do? Like, chop her up and then, like, telekinesis her into a bag and then, like, telekinesis that bag? You know, I'm just trying to think
like,
through.
Was he going
to
leave town? Like, what was he going to do? What's, like, leaving a mess in the at a barn that's not his.
What's the end game here?
Right. I don't think he had one because he's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So he throws Clark around. He throws him up into the hayloft. He says, "You got to stick those landings, Clark." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Like, I don't understand why he feels
it's
the need
crazy.
for these one-liners. Anyway, Clark says, "You can't win, Justin," and then he throws him 20 feet as he often does, and I assume that kind of knocks him out. And then he goes over to Chloe, and Chloe has regained consciousness just at the perfect time, just in the nick of time. And they share a moment here. And and that's the end of Justin Gaines. A tragic character, I guess, but I mean, he really didn't need to be evil. Like, you know what I mean?
No, he just needed to be like tortured, misunderstood, whatever. Yeah, I wrote it like, wow, one throw from Clark ends him. Okay. That's all it took. I mean, I guess Clark can throw pretty hard, so I guess that makes sense, but did he kill him?
They mentioned late at the end of the episode that he's in the psychiatric ward somewhere.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Probably shouting, "Clark Kent has superpowers! Why don't anyone believe me?" You know, I mean, Clark needs to look out for this because when he doesn't, you know, when people don't die or through some series of events have amnesia or something, there's a lot of people out there that know Clark has superpowers or interfered somehow in their plan, so I'm not really... I guess, you know, because he...
Good point.
He hit Clark with a chainsaw and it exploded. I guess he could have thought maybe he was wearing some armor under there. And then he got thrown 20 feet by Clark, but could think, oh, maybe Clark's really strong. I don't know. I'm just trying to justify the fact that Justin Gaines doesn't go tell people Clark Kent has superpowers.
Well, you're right. I think they probably just write him off as being delusional and not listening to him.
Well, when you have like 15 people that say the same thing, and they actually do explore this later on in the show, thank goodness, where like a lot of the people that Clark has put away kind of team up against him.
Oh, really? Okay.
You want to kill the spider? I want to kill the spider. You know, classic Spider-Man 3, supervillain team up. So,
yeah, so classic.
That's what I think of.
Oh, boy.
So we cut back to Lex's plot to wrap it up. He's gone to visit Pamela in the hospital because something else Lionel had revealed to Lex in their conversation was Pamela has cancer and she's dying. And, you know, she didn't tell Lex that. She didn't ask Lex for money. All she came to see Lex for was for closure.
Right.
I think that is what confirmed for Lex she wasn't playing a game. That's why he should believe her over Lionel. I mean, he's always suspicious of Lionel, but he's probably even more suspicious of this woman who disappeared out of his life 10 years ago.
Oh, sure. Exactly. Well, and he obviously doesn't trust at all or easily. So,
and so he goes to see her in the hospital here. And, you know, if I had decided not to count the Metropolis Children's Hospital at the beginning of the episode, this would have counted for the plus one for a hospital visit. So, because I only count one per episode. It's like one coupon per customer kind of thing. Like, I'm not going to count this episode for two. I feel like that would be unfair, especially like a character is in a hospital and they go visit them several times. It would not be fair to me to count like every scene, you know, they're in the hospital. So,
oh yeah, no, just once per episode seems fair.
You know, you really feel for Lex here. I mean, and this is the stuff that really makes Lex Luthor's story in Smallville such a tragedy, because you know, Pamela, he tells Lex that, you know, your mother would be proud of you. You know, and that you can tell that really affects Lex, and he starts to kind of tear up and get emotional. And because yeah. to Lex, you know, there's only that's probably the only person he cares about being proud of him. You know, and, you know, I can relate to that. Like, there's right. really like there's only a couple people in my life, like my mom being one of them, who I care about being proud of me. The rest of people, I don't care what they think. You know, so sure. I can totally relate to Lex here.
Well, and he also knows that, like, her words matter because he knows that, like, she loved him and cared about him just like she cared about his mom. So it's like, actually meaningful.
Yeah, and as he said, this is one of the two women he loved in his life.
Right.
So, and that's the tragedy of Lex in, this, in Smallville. He goes out of his way to try and be a better man. He just can't do it, you know? And that's the yeah. that's the explanation of Smallville. Like, well, is it nature? Is it nurture? Is it experiences? Is it choices? Is it did Clark inadvertently cause him to turn to darkness, you know, by keeping secrets from him? So it's that's one of the most fascinating plot threads throughout the entire series. So but yeah, this scene hits you in the feels there with Lex and Pamela in the hospital. Now, so one bit of trivia here about Pamela, she is actually, and this is like way in the future spoilers, right? Pamela Jenkins here, this character, this is the only episode she appears in, because obviously she's you know, on her deathbed here. She is the mother of Tess Mercer, the main character from season 8 to season 10. Now, this is a plot twist not revealed until, you know, mid-season 10, we find out, because Tess Mercer had always been a mysterious character who, like, you know, basically filled the Lex role after Michael Rosenbaum left and Lex Luthor
really?
Left. Yeah. Yeah. So she was the head of Luthor Corp and inherited all his stuff. For some reason, it was mysterious. No one understood why. And I don't think the writers even knew why at the time. Like, they needed someone to fill this Luthor Corp role, and they invented Tess Mercer. Tess Mercer being a name, a combination between Miss Tessmacher from the Superman movies and then Mercy Graves, his bodyguard from the animated series. So that's where the name came from. And then Lex Luthor does have a younger sister in the comic books who will be appearing on Supergirl next season, by the way. So there was a precedence for this, and then we see, well, through some flashbacks and other things and Tess investigating her backstory in season 10, we see her birth certificate, and it says Lutessa Lena Luthor, right? So that kind of ties all these things together, and the mother was Pamela Jenkins, and the father was Lionel Luthor, and he drops her off at, you know, some orphanage, and...
Whoa.
Yeah, it's pretty dark. Yeah, not as dark as this episode, but it's pretty dark, because she's like, I don't know, she's a young kid, you know, she's probably around 10, and she, you know, we see Lionel driving off in the limo, and she's all sad.
Jeez.
Smallville's a dark show, all right?
Dang, man, yeah.
Hashtag life. So the thing about this is that at the time, I thought that was a really cool retcon. I was like, oh, man, that's great how they tied that together and made it all work and tied into the Lena Luthor character in the comics. But I don't know. Like, I think this is something that Pamela would have told Lex here. He was aware that he was her brother. So I'm right. not sure. Maybe this is when he found out. I mean, if he was going to find out, this would have been the time, because this woman's on her deathbed. She probably tells Lex about that. But at the same time, if you're trying to reconcile with this kid, reconcile with this young man who you knew as a child, yeah. Do you want to tell him you had a love child with his father, you know, while his mother was still alive? You know, because that does not help yeah. repair the rift. So I can see either way here. But I just felt that was worth meriting a mention, because this is the mother of a main character of the series later on down the road.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. That does kind of change the interpretation of their scene, too, a little bit, like, if you go back and knowing that.
Well, it's a retcon from literally 9 years later, so it's clearly was not the intention here. But,
right.
But yes, no, I agree. It does. When you look at it through that framework, it does change. So we get our last montage of scenes here. We get Chloe and Clark are in the Talon, and she reveals that Justin's in a psych ward. And like as we talked about, he's probably ranting and raving about Clark Kent having superpowers. But then Clark, you know, he takes the first step here. He tells Chloe, he's like, hey, I have those two tickets to that journalism conference. I was thinking we could go together and spend the day together. And then he kind of timidly reaches over the table and grabs her hand, and she just looks so happy, and he looks so happy, and just I got so many happy feels from this moment, you know, because with Chloe, you've seen Chloe pine after Clark all season, and to see them come together like this is just really heartwarming to me.
Well, I agree, but at the same time, I felt kind of bummed, because I was like, well, it's not gonna last. Like, I don't know anything about this show, but historically, I can just imagine, since that's not who, Chloe's not Lois, her name's not Lois.
Or is it? No, I'm scared.
I don't know. Right? I really like that theory, though. If I was watching the show, I would have totally subscribed to that.
Yeah, so
that's awesome.
What we're referencing is, we talked about it off microphone. Is,
oh, did we?
There was a fan. No, it's all good. It's hard to keep track. There was a fan theory that Chloe would become Lois Lane and it was called Clois, C-H-L-O-I-S, Clois. And that is a fan theory that we will save discussion for that for another day. But because yes. I have very long, very strong opinions about that. But moving on, like I said, I don't want to alienate the fan base just yet of the podcast because we're just getting started.
Okay. Yeah, you won't. We're good.
Look, Chloe, I'll tell you this, Nancy. Chloe did get a happy ending, and I was satisfied with it.
Oh, that's so nice. Okay, good.
Just so you know. I thought for years they were going to kill her off tragically, and it was going to be like, oh, man, what a terrible life she had, right? But
right. She
has a happy ending. She was happy. Everybody was happy. It was a win-win. So
yay, good.
But in the meantime, we're not there yet because we pan up from this very cute shot of Clark and Chloe holding hands to Lana behind the rack focus from their hands to Lana behind the counter with the Talon, and you can tell, like, this really upsets her to see Chloe and Clark together. And she basically makes this decision in her head, like, all right, that's it. I'm going to go break up with Whitney. Because Whitney walks in, and she's like, okay, here we go. Whitney, we need to talk. Like, I'm not really sure what her game plan here was. Like, because Whitney comes in, he's upset, and she notices it. And she's like, oh, what's wrong? He says, it's my dad. And his dad has passed away. But assuming that had not happened, right? Lana was going to break up with Whitney right there, and then what? Go over to Clark and be like, hey, I'm single now. Don't get with Chloe. Get with me instead. Like, bad move, Lana. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah, she hadn't. I mean, I think she was thinking she was going to have one over on Chloe. Like, when she was like, oh, hey, we should get together, he'd immediately be like, okay, because Lana's his first pick.
Yeah, well, this is the start. Like, for all of season one, I was like, of course you want Clark and Lana to get together. That's like the role of his dreams, girl next door, right? But then as the season progressed, you know, Chloe and Clark, they had this great chemistry, characters and actors, and they got together here, and you're really rooting for that relationship. So when it comes around to Lana, you're like, oh, cool, Clark and Lana get together. You're like, no, I don't want to see that now. We're past that.
Yes.
You know, so we're yes, over that.
Exactly.
So the final scene of the episode is Mr. Fordman's funeral. And I must say, we get Time After Time by Eva Cassidy.
Yes. I really liked it, though. I thought it was really appropriate.
And this is one of the, like, exhibit A of great popular music fitting final scenes in Smallville, and especially in the early seasons, they did a great job of this. It's raining. Of course, it's a funeral and a superhero story, so of course it's raining, right?
Oh, it has to be.
We get several exchange glances between Clark and Lana and Chloe looking at Clark, looking at Lana, and I'm not sure what all these mean, right?
Yes.
But it sums up, like, there's a lot of angst in the air. But I must say, I give a lot of credit to the marketing team, right, in this episode, because I remember watching these episodes as they came out. The trailer for this episode showed a funeral, right? And it tries to imply, like, you know, Chloe or Lana are going to die, right? Which you know is not going to happen, right?
Right.
But then you see Principal Kwan die. You're like, oh, okay. Well, I guess that was the funeral. We're going to see at the end of the episode. Okay, that makes sense. But then, in the second to last scene, they throw us the curveball because this episode they had told us that Whitney's dad is better and things are looking up for him.
Yeah, I was not expecting it.
And then, boom, Whitney's dad's passed away. You're like, wow, they totally threw me off with the marketing there. So good job by the team. Because usually these trailers either misinterpret episodes or ruin them, right? But this one, it told you what was going to happen. But the way they presented everything in the trailer and in the episode, it allowed this emotional payoff to not be spoiled. So I really appreciated that. And, you know, Clark kind of walks off into the rain, which I don't know why he's doing that. But it's
well,
a really cool superhero image.
Well, he has to look super
image.
Emo.
Yes, exactly.
You have to.
It's the most emo-est of emo things. Like, rain in daytime is even sadder than rain at nighttime, right? Because, like, it's like, if the rain wasn't here, it'd be this beautiful day, but the rain is here.
Right. And then he and, like, Lana have to exchange, like, this longing, like, look with each other.
Right. And then he walks off by this, like, this angel statue, right? And walks off into the graveyard. And I do think it's one of the most iconic Smallville endings and end scenes and end songs. And it's to a great episode, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed this episode. Like I said, I had some issues with the annoying, like, that trope of the damsel, the hysterical woman, calm man being right, kind of, ugh, I hate all that stuff. But at the same time, like, that's just kind of, you know, how TV was then. So, I mean, and The X-Files is not exempt from that, as much as I love it. There's so many times that I kept thinking, like, oh, here's Scully being damseled again. Like, I mean, I don't really care because I love the show so much. Like, whatever, I'll give it a pass. So,
well, same here.
Well, sure. Well, right. Because I still think, like, they didn't really do any sort of, like, lasting damage to Chloe's character. Like, she didn't immediate, like, she doesn't start doubting herself because of this, right?
No. Actually, in the next couple episodes, Clark and Chloe are at their strongest as far as at any point in the series of them being in a relationship. That's what these next two episodes are.
Nice. Okay, well, maybe I'll watch those. I'm curious.
There you go. But, you know, you finish off the season. There's only two more episodes, right?
Oh, I really should. I'm really curious now.
There you go. But stop then after season one, because starting in season two, we start a dark period for Chloe. So.
Oh, no. Okay.
So should we do the I told you so part, or is my perennial bad judgment implicit?
Chloe, I wish I were wrong.
What is it with me? I can spot a wall of weird material from a mile away, but put it right in front of me and I'm oblivious.
You're not oblivious. You're trusting. You're strong enough to take risks with your emotions. I wish I were as brave as you. I still have those two tickets to the journalism convention. It'd be a good chance for us to spend some time together.
Okay, it's a date.
Crush got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, which is relatively high. Like I've been saying in our recent episodes here, I feel like there should be some kind of curve with the IMDb rating scale, because literally everything is from a 6.5 to a 9. Like, everything is in that range. No one gives anything a 1. No one gives anything a 10. but 8.2 is pretty strong. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage for his Smallville episode review, he gave Crush a 4 out of 5. He says, this is what he had to say. I mean, as I always say, I recommend everyone go read these reviews on Superman homepage, much like the emails. There's not enough time for me to read, you know, word by word, nor should I, because it's someone else's intellectual property. But
right.
Neil Bailey has good reviews, and I think they're pretty well balanced and pretty honest about everything. And he gave it a 4 out of 5, and he says -1 for the horrible villain. So he was not a fan of Justin Gaines, of Adam Brody. So anyway, 4 out of 5 is a strong rating from him. And so, Nancy, what would you give Crush on a letter grade scale?
The letter grade scale. I mean, I only have one other episode to, like, really compare it to. But overall, I mean, I didn't regret watching it. It was fun. It's made me want to go see the other two episodes, because you said there's some good, like, Chloe Clark follow-up. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of interested in that. Mm-hmm. I guess I'd give it. I don't want to, like, rate it too high, but these are the only two episodes I've seen. So, I mean, I guess I give it, like, an A-.
All right. A-. I like it. For me, you know, this has always been one of my favorite episodes of season one. And because, you know, I'm a Clark fan. It's like, it's shipping. Like, look, I'm not a shipper. Like, it's not why I watch TV shows. But when you're watching Smallville, you got to pick your ship, right?
Well, I mean, I think that's true of most shows that have any sort of, like, feat or longevity to them. Yeah, mm-hmm. you have, like, a ship that you like. So you're a Chloe Clark shipper.
Yeah, I'm a C-H-L-A-R-K. So this is that. This end of season one is the time, the series where that shines. And but there's a lot of other things in this episode that don't quite add up. Some plot decisions and character choices and motivations that are like, really? We went there? And we kind of retroactively taint Principal Kwan's character as well. And
yeah, man, dang.
And things get really dark. But all that being said, I did really enjoy it. I think Chloe and Clark are great, obviously. I think Adam Brody was great. I think he was really elevated the episode. I think with a lesser actor, this would be a much worse episode.
Oh, agreed. It'd be so cheesy.
He has a very, I don't know, understated or subtle performance here about several things, and I like that. Mm-hmm. And even though he is like a psychopath or a sociopath, one of the two, or maybe both, right? You don't instantly hate him. You know, he is still kind of like, maybe just because he's Adam Brody, he has that air about him, that unassuming air about
maybe
him.
So.
But you don't hate him, and that's a credit to him as an actor. So I'm gonna give this one a B+. So
nice.
I liked it. I liked it a lot, but it's not quite. There are a few things here and there that keep it from the A range, but a B plus, a solid B plus.
Oh, that's a good rating from you, especially since you're such a fan.
That says a lot. I said the other day, like, I feel like all my ratings are either like C pluses or A minuses. Like, I'm like, you know what? I love this episode, but I'm going to give it an A minus. Or this episode sucked, but it had this great moment, so I'm going to give it a C+. Like, those are, I feel like those are all my reviews at the end of the episodes.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm trying to find a middle ground, because we had a stretch where a couple of back-to-back, like, bad episodes, but those two episodes actually, like, spoke to me the most out of any episode of the series. I'm talking about Reaper and Drone now. So, and for the reasons why, go back and listen to those episodes. I've always held on to Smallville. But this was a good episode that, you know, didn't really have any, like, life lesson or anything like that. But I feel like it had some deep stuff. It had some layers to it, and I enjoyed it.
Nice. Me too.
So, Nancy, we have some business to attend to before we wrap up here. We have our Smallville series tally board. And we have three categories that need to be updated here. We have hospital visits. That's a plus one. So we're now at 7 for hospital visits.
Gosh.
Out of 19 episodes. So do the math there, right? That number's going to be obscene. Obscene when we get there. We have another KO to keep Clark's secret. That's a plus one. So we're now at 6 of those. You think that's a lot?
Well, I mean, yes and no. Like, are there other ways of making, you know, getting rid of people or incapacitating them at just the right time so that they don't discover his secret that aren't KOs? Are they just not in the room?
Well, okay, yeah. Well, think of the X-Files, right? It's basically the equivalent of the X-Files Scully getting knocked out or being locked out of a room, being trapped somewhere while the spaceship comes by, right? That's the equivalent.
Of course, okay, so when Mulder's there with all the lights flooding the room. Yeah, mm-hmm, all that stuff. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Mulder, what happened? Yeah, okay, we get it, Scully. The last category we need to update is the Smallville High School faculty deaths, and that's a plus one, so we're now at 2 because Coach Walt, the pyrotechnic football coach, died in Hothead, and now Principal Kwan has passed away in Crush. So we're at 2 on those. So that's the tally board. But one last thing we do, Nancy, is the Bechdel test, right?
Oh.
Does this episode pass or fail? You tell me.
I think it fails.
Yeah. As lots of Smallville episodes do. Unfortunately, this one does fail.
Do they start passing eventually?
Well, you know, you'd be surprised. There were some that unexpectedly passed, like Drone passed the last episode. I didn't expect that. But there are more women characters, like Lois comes on the show, obviously Tess Mercer down the road. So I think definitely seasons 8 through 10 are going to pass a lot more because Chloe, mm-hmm, Lois, and Tess are like the major characters outside of Clark in those later seasons, and they have a lot of interaction. So I feel like then it's going to be a lot of back-end Bechdel test passing for Smallville. Front end, not so much. So
yeah, okay, fair enough.
But it's a teenage drama, right? So, of course, when girls are going to talk, right? Anyway. Well, there you have it. That's going to do it for our conversation on Crush. Nancy, thank you so much for taking the time to join me again for this episode. I really like your unique perspective on things, being an outsider to Smallville.
I know, you know, I really enjoy every time you have me on here. I'm always looking forward to like what episodes you picked for us to watch and talk about.
Cool. So you'll be back in season 2 then.
Okay, sounds good. I like watching it. I think like I enjoy it more than like watching a show that I know a lot about. I think it's more fun.
There you go. It's if you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, great. So we'll find, like I said, season 2, it's a tough season for Chloe. It's probably her darkest hour. But we'll find a couple good episodes for you to watch. And I would encourage you to go ahead and finish off season 1 yourself. You know, watch the next 2 episodes. If you enjoy Chloe and you like what you're seeing here with Chloe and Clark, this trilogy here of episodes at the end of the season is definitely the one to watch.
Okay, rad. I'm actually going to watch those. I'm going to finish it off. I'm very curious.
Excellent. And let me know. Let us know on Facebook or on Twitter what you thought, your thoughts on the show. I'd be curious to know your opinion there as well. So.
Ooh, I'll let you know. I will do that.
Excellent, excellent. So if people want to find you, speaking of social media, if people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Well, I guess you can go find me on Twitter at DASMOOSH. That's at Dasmoosh. I'm kind of taking a break from some social media because I'm trying to get this manuscript finished. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying not to distract myself. But if you hit me up on there, I will talk back. I do a podcast with Matt Morris called Author Strong, giving writers the tools they need to succeed.
There you go. What a great tagline.
We had to workshop it a little bit.
Awesome. Well, as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. And as for the show, you can find us at Always Mallville on Twitter. That's Always Mallville with one S. Look us up on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. Or send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. Again, that's with one S. And also, leave us some iTunes reviews. We love reading the iTunes reviews always, of course. And we always love reading iTunes reviews at always. Hold on to Smallville. I was trying to tie together the name of the podcast there, but I don't know if that, don't think I stuck that landing. But anyway, send us, look, if you like the show and you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. It's great. Apparently, it helps with the metrics, getting people, you know, aware of the show and stuff like that. And it's just awesome for us to see. And obviously, as you heard on this episode, we read them on air. So we'll give you a shout out. Appreciate it very much. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. We'll be back next week talking about Obscura. And until then, always hold on to Smallville.
If you're lost, you can look and you will find me time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I'll be waiting time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I will be waiting time after time. Time.